that made up of members appointed by the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, the Governor, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And these people will essentially make recommendations that will take into consideration the comparability with similar positions in neighboring states, fair compensation for qualifications and responsibilities, and state budget limitations. Within those criteria, they will simply make recommendations to the next legislative session. The legislature will be limited in this bill to approving or either increasing or reducing their salary level. If they reduce it, it can take effect immediately. If the legislature chooses to increase salaries, it would not take effect until the following biennium. That's basically all the bill does. It's a good bill, Max. I did this particularly for you.
Are you ready for the vote, Mr. Chairman?
Kay has come up with a couple technical problems, I think.
Just a question. Did you intend to incorporate the tax court judge in the proposal?
Is he elected?
He's elected, and his salary is set by statute. It's been it's not listed in Section 7.
Now, what you need,
these are the amendments that the House Rules Committee made. You've got all those.
Right? Yeah.
And these were all taken out.
It just, there is no reference to the tax court judge.
That would be a mistake.
Okay. And you intended to leave the legislative in for the time being.
Where?
Or just in the statutes as they are, or
yes.
Were they? Okay.
Yes. Well, that was a decision by the Rules Committee, which is one I hope we would be willing to open up again.
That should be a fairly short item. We'll do that first. Then go to 368, which again shouldn't be too long of a presentation relating to TRFA and the transfer to PERS, and then end up with a judicial retirement. So if you're a judge and you want to stretch your legs or see what's going on with the new prison next door in that hearing, it'll probably be about 8 o'clock or shortly after when we get to your bill, okay? With that, Steve, do you want to give us the introduction on the Jobs Training Partnership Act and what we need to do with it?
Mr. Chairman, this is phase two of a three-phase proposal. The Executive Department, during the budget request, received limitations for the 81-83 biennium to begin the planning and the program proposals for the Jobs Training Partnership Act. Phase two requires that the agency come back in limitation for the first quarter of the 1983-85 biennium. That's the request that you see before you. The agency's request is to establish 15 positions to establish related to the Jobs Training Partnership Act and $684,441 in federal funds limitation. In addition to those two items, the agency is also coupled with this request and with reorganization of the Intergovernmental Relations Division, two additional requests. One is for the establishment of two positions to be able to manage the Community Development Block Grant. And the fourth request, the second part of the community development request related to that and the jobs training addition in responsibilities, is the reclassification and upgrade of two positions in the organization. That would be for the administrator and his deputy. With that, Mr. Chairman, the packet that's before you has been given to the Executive Department. The Intergovernmental Relations Division has gone over that. And you may want to take testimony then from them.
Good. Bob and Rutman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Robert Smith, Director of the Executive Department. On my left is Robert Montgomery, Administrator of the Intergovernmental Relations Division. On my right is Holly Miles, Manager for the Joint Jobs Training Partnership Act within the Intergovernmental Relations Division. As Mr. Foray has mentioned, the Intergovernmental Relations Division has, through a succession of additions, gone from a very small unit involving intergovernmental relations, primarily local government, state agency interface, into administering two major federal grant programs, Community Development Block Grant, that has been in place for several months, and the Job Training Partnership Act, which is in the planning phase now. We have chosen to come in with a request showing a reorganized Intergovernmental Relations Division rather than creating freestanding units within the division. We believe we've come in with a very realistic and conservative proposal for spending for administration purposes, and we can support that with comparisons to what other states have been doing if you're interested in that. We have the people here to explain all the purposes of the program. The JTPA program, of course, is a successor for job retraining and development to some previous programs that have been less than ideal. The decision was made without our urging to place it in the Intergovernmental Relations Division, and we will do everything in our power to see an effective program demounted on October 1, 1983, when the actual job training starts under the new program. With that, if you wish, we could have Mr. Montgomery go into a little more on the programs, or merely respond to questions if you're satisfied that you understand the purposes. We will be returning to the Emergency Board for the program elements of JTPA sometime late August, early September. At that time, the planning phases by the various local units and the state council should be completed.
Thank you, Bob. Just for the orientation of the members, in the packet is Senate listed as amendments and movements to Senate Bill 170. 170 is a bill that was going no further in one of the subcommittees and has been assigned to this committee as the vehicle to accomplish this appropriation. So technically, that's what we'll be working with when we get to work session. Bob?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Bob Montgomery, Administrator of Intergovernmental Relations Division. I guess Mr. Smith has covered basically why we're here. My best response would be to respond to any questions you may have or give an outline of what we plan to do over the next 2 years, whichever you prefer, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions for the committee? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where's your plan?
The plan?
We told you to come back with a plan.
We will have a, I let Holly Miles handle that, but I will answer the question directly, Mr. Chairman. Under federal law, the plan is due on June the 30th of this year for the state plan. Then we're to go out to the SDA service delivery areas, of which there are 8 in the state, and they are to formulate their plan, which I believe is due into us on August 15th. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
And then the plan will be presented to the Emergency Board, I assume, at that meeting.
What guidelines did you give the local?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Holly Miles to respond to those questions. Okay.
As you may know, this system is a performance-based system, and so we have really two sets of guidelines. One are some minimum performance criteria so that we can make sure that more people get jobs. And the second is coordination criteria, which requires that in the local areas they look to and show evidence to the state council that there is not an unnecessary duplication of services. And there are some very specific guidelines that the state council has recommended to be utilized in that plan.
Where are they? We don't have copies of them.
They'll be put into the state plan that will, the governor's coordination plan, which will not be available until the end of this month.
Can I follow up?
Certainly.
Could you share with us where your priorities are in terms of serving the unemployed, the displaced? How are you working with AFS? What's your relationship with community colleges? How are you going to impact state agencies? Are you going to be requiring that the local pigs place a priority on certain populations that we're trying to get back into the job market so that they don't impact the state agency budget?
That certainly is one of the priorities, and that has been the local private industry councils, and I'm not sure how much people know about JEDPA, but locally, each service delivery area must have a private industry council that's made up of over half of the members must be from the private sector, and they're the people who will be making the decisions locally on who will get trained and what occupations and training should take place in their local area. In response to state agencies, specifically the Department of Human Resources has been working with us for the last 3 months in developing a plan of how we can coordinate and what ways we can serve clients to both agencies' best ability. Specifically in terms of adult and family services, we're in the process now of drafting an agreement that will clearly outline how referrals are made and what kind of training may be available and how we can both serve the client to the most efficient possibility.
Let me ask one final question. The local service districts don't include in their plan the finding of employment training opportunities for welfare mothers, welfare clients, and you don't have that as part of your state plan, as part of your priorities, it would then be very possible that even no welfare clients be served by this program or a very small number of clients be served if you as a state aren't placing those as your top priorities. Isn't that possible?
That is possible.
Yes, Mike.
Before the discussion goes further, I think it'd be appropriate that I identify myself as a member of the council appointed by the governor, and if decisions made on this subject, I don't know what the appropriate role for me to take is. And I don't want to influence the committee as a member of the council. Representative Katz's points are right on, and I would join in questioning those, but I'm also a member of the council. I don't feel right to get involved. I would seek someone's advice when it comes to voting on this issue because, in fact, I'm a member of that council. I don't know whether that's a conflict of interest. Actually, it's a big burden. I was hoping when Steve Forey came in with a recommendation, he'd recommend that the members of the legislature resign, and then I would have a good excuse to do that. But I don't see that in your recommendations. But I wanted you to know that, and I would prefer not to get involved because I'm on both sides of the fence, if you understand.
Oh, this is already focused. Yes.
Oh, well. But
the questions are right on, I wanted to say. And I can declare my conflict of what I'm supposed to do and be quiet.
The statutes relating to potential conflict of interest declaration does not, are stated in both a positive and a negative way. And so even if it's impacting you negatively, you have to declare that potential conflict. Otherwise, we can use you as a consultant.
I wanted the members of this committee to know that. I wasn't sitting here as a sandbagger.
Mr. Chairman, I think, yes, it is possible if the state council and the local units, councils, don't take into consideration the kinds of concerns that Representative Katz has expressed, it's possible. That's one of the basic considerations of why the governor designated a unit within the executive department, whereas we are concerned in the executive department as a total, as an executive branch agency, and Representative Katz's concerns of seeing that the best use is made of the money, as anyone is. And so anything is possible, but the different location for this program when a new program came along was specifically chosen, so the broad viewpoints of the state and local government involvement are represented.
Now, our only hammer on that over the interim will be through the emergency board because obviously with only
three. We will have a developed plan to come back to you with in late August, early September. This authority is to get the people to develop the plan, the staff people.
what the $684,000, you indicated that was chief administration compared to the other states.
Let me just say this. I have one other copy. I'd be happy to share it with the chair. This is based on telephone survey of states. The top is for CDBG, which is the one federal program, and as it shows the amounts of money in millions of dollars going to those states, the average. As you can see, we have the lowest number of employees for the total program of any state in that list, and the highest number of dollars to be allocated to small cities and counties per employee. This is including all of the requests that we have in front of you today. You'll find the same picture in JTPA. We talked only to the two neighboring states, but we also know that Wisconsin has 62 employees in their central JTPA staff, and North Carolina has in excess of 40, and those are approximately similar states. And as you can see, the situation of dollars in JTPA by central staff consideration, again, is double our two neighboring states. I don't know how you can get any kind of reasonable thing if you use the comparison of what other states are doing. We're doing it cheaper and with far fewer people. And that's the full budget request.
Other questions from the committee?
Just another question. Is the request for expenditure limitation of the $30 million or whatever that
no.
is not?
The,
it's just
June September 30th.
The $684,000.
September 30th, REJECTA. We'll have to return to a late August. Hopefully, an e-board will be scheduled for early September so we can complete the state plan, get it all wrapped up, prepare our thing, and come and see you in middle September.
I guess the final question is, there's no sense you bringing us a plan if there are no state priorities in that plan. And I don't know where you're at on that.
There will be target, each plan from the local SDAs will have to list their targeted audiences, and welfare clients are one of those audiences. And there are, you know, I didn't mean to imply that welfare clients will not be served. There's a performance standard for welfare clients. JEDPA, the National Job Training Partnership Act program, is designed to assist people who are on welfare, move off of welfare, and that is a priority of the program. I don't think that is going to be a problem at all, and I think when we come back with a plan, you'll be able to see that.
One additional question. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to dominate. I apologize. Is it my understanding that if Senator Thorne and the representative resign from the council, that the legislature's oversight can be expanded?
Yes.
Could you somebody explain that?
Mr. Chairman, members, in the literature that we have gotten from NCSL and other agencies that monitor legislative actions suggests that some states are choosing not to be involved with legislative members on the executive council, but rather moving back a step from that and keeping the legislative oversight in a more pristine kind of fashion so that you're not involved as a participant in the state council. You really have that choice still, although as Senator Thorne pointed out, at the present time, we do have two legislative members, Representative Smith and Senator Thorne, as members of the state council.
So we could have a interim legislative body staying on top of them.
You could. I think that you might not be able to identify funding for that from the public law sources, but I think that'd be a minor concern to the assembly.
Okay.
Mr. Burke, as the fiscal officer, and certainly I have no, you know, there's no turf that I'm trying to protect. I'd be, you know, you set aside and put this in an arm length situation. As a fiscal officer for the legislature, what would be your recommendation? And 30, you're not going to hurt my feelings if you tell me I ought to resign tomorrow. I it's not my desire to get in the way of some kind of legislative oversight. And I wasn't aware that that option existed. And I'm pleased to hear the subject open tonight. And I'm certain that Representative Smith would react similar to my reaction, that if it seemed appropriate that we not participate, certainly I wouldn't hesitate to take whatever action is necessary. So if you have a recommendation, I'd be delighted to have it, or if you want to think about it, why offer it another
time. Mr. Chairman, Senator Thorne, after a cursory review of your options, I think that we'd be prepared to recommend that you keep your options open and don't proceed to be locked in all the way as a co-participant in the executive side. I think ultimately we would probably recommend to you that you withdraw from executive participation and try to participate in an oversight capacity, and at the same time try to pre-plan or impose policy guidance on the folks who are going to bring you a plan later, and then measure their performance against that.
It is indeed very awkward to sit here on this panel and pass judgment on their budget and then go to the meeting and be on the other side. It's a very awkward and very clumsy situation to work in, so your advice is well taken. Okay. I'll talk to the governor about that later.
None of those options are precluded or enhanced or restricted by moving on this bill tonight, as I understand it. Is that correct? Okay, is there anybody else who, any other questions? Is there anybody else who's here for this bill? If not, the amendments are here.
Would you like to take just a few minutes?
Yes, why don't you?
Mr. Chairman, staff has taken the liberty of having prepared for you amendments and budget notes. And you'll find those, there's three single sheets. The last two sheets are the two documents that we'll look from. With the proposed amendment, the fiscal office is recommending that the limitation be established for the period beginning July 1, 83 and ending September 30th, 1983 as the maximum limits for the expenditure of federal funds collected or received by the Intergovernmental Relations Division of the Executive Department. This would be in addition to any other limitations. That way we would not mess up the community development block grant funds that the agency has already received a limitation to expand. And then section 2 provides for an effective date of July 1, 1983.
I move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Motion is to adopt the amendments to Senate Bill 170, which is in effect is replacing the entire bill with the amendments 170-2. Is there objection to the amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Steve, this afternoon you mentioned that the dollar total might not be accurate. Is the $684,000 the correct number?
The agency had sent me over a revised figure. The the number there is a best guess estimate on the agency's part. I see no reason to increase it. We're talking about $1,000, I think, was the variance there. The 684 is probably going to be sufficient. The second item, Mr. Chairman, then, is the two budget notes on the second sheet. Mm-hmm. And the first of those deals with the 92-day job placement limitation for adult and family services. And this goes back to some of the comments that Representative Katz was making with respect to giving statewide guidelines to these service delivery areas and avoiding disruption of the current caseload for the Adult and Family Services caseload. Committee may want to discuss that particular item with the agency. And then the second one deals with community colleges. And again, the intent there is to avoid impacts on both state funds and local property tax support.
Are there questions or comments about the proposed budget notes?
Chair.
Bureau.
There is a bill, I think, coming out of the House Human Resources that had, or was House Labor, that had a higher goal in terms of the number of days. Now, this has enough flexibility in the language that uses the 92-day, I think it was, what, 180-day goal. This has enough flexibility. You may want to look at it. You may want to hold off, I don't know, until you check that out with the House Labor or Human Resources Committee. This has a 92-day goal with provisions made for exceptions. You may want to think about that, if that's acceptable or not.
Mr. Chairman, these budget notes are perfectly acceptable to us. It's our goal. We would not be supporting a 180-day arbitrary where you can't require someone to finish training before that time of 180 days. When we think the flexibility on the 92-day average to reach that goal as an average, and still in certain specialized cases with exceptions being able to go beyond it is proper way to go.
One other question. How do you see yourself structuring the contracts with the community colleges?
Well, I believe the contract with the community college would be from the local agency, but we would establish in their plan and require them to establish the same kind of goal before we would approve their plan.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm going to adopt those budget notes. Is there any discussion on the motion to adopt these budget notes?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Is this the 92-day job placement limitation for Adult and Family Services? Is that, how did you arrive at that?
That has been, I know, in previous discussions with some of the program people in this area, 90 days has been about the average. Holly can answer more specifically.
Well, it's specifically an Adult Family Services requirement in their demonstration WIN project adults with children over 3 years old be involved in a job search activities to find work. And if they're in training, they will grant a waiver of up to 92 days.
In addition to the training period?
No, during the training period.
The whole thing would last only 92 days?
92 days. And the bill that Representative Katz spoke to suggested that go to 180. We're suggesting an average would be adequate for the training of participants under JEDPA. That some people will, in fact, be involved in training that's less than 92 days, and there may be some specific cases where people would be involved in training over 92 days, but that we certainly could meet that average.
The average certainly is better than the...
It seems to me that working with somebody in Adult and Family Services, the average would be more like 180 days if you're going to get them something meaningful. 92 days, that doesn't seem adequate time as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not using the WIN program as any panel, you know, as any guideline, because I don't think that does a good job.
Tom?
Mr. Chairman, not to be facetious, but the Army makes an officer out of you in 90 days.
That may have been the Army that you were in.
They don't do that anymore.
I know they
don't. Uh-huh. The language is flexible enough with listed as an average and as a goal, as opposed to a mandate. But again, since it's the current policy, it seems to me that the flexibility is provided in the now. Are there any objections to the adoption of the budget notes? There's one. Any other objections? Representative, Senator McCoy's objection should be noted, otherwise the budget notes are adopted as submitted. Is there a motion on the bill?
I move it after, Chairman.
Senate Bill 170 is moved to the full Ways and Means Committee as amended. Is there any further discussion or comments? If not, you call the roll, please.
Senator Meeker?
Aye.
Senator Thorne?
I would vote, but just so not, for the reason I stated, I'm required by the rules. Jack, what am I required to do? Am I required to abstain or vote?
If you're here, you can vote.
You want to read quickly?
I'll vote for it. I think it's probably, as accepted, I hope. I'll let the swing vote. Go ahead.
Senator McCoy?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Representative Jones? Representative Simpson?
Aye.
And Chair, Representative Bowman?
I don't want to vote.
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Senate Bill 170 is passed with full committee. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, take an ordinary moment here to speak about House Bill 2366. That is the judge's retirement bill. Governor Attia supports the concept of an adequate retirement system for judges. There is a, well, virtually identical bill introduced in the Senate as well. This one has moved through House Judiciary already, but I want to make sure the members of the committee knows that while there is no money in the governor's budget, it's part of the judicial branch, hopefully something will be worked out. And you'll be getting very explicit testimony on the problem with the judge's retirement system if you don't already know that it relates.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's move on now to Senate Bill 368, Senator Wiles.